envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insights, tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Disclaimer, this podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future. Hey, everybody, and welcome to No Further Questions. We are back for another episode. Today we have a special guest with us. As you know, in Harris County, it is election season, so election times are coming up. But before I get, I guess I got to introduce myself. I forgot. Right. Yeah, just important. Talking fast. It's your girl, Brandy, and to my left.
All the way to the left.
All the way.
T. Hutch. Hey, guys, it's Tria. How y'all doing today? Sam's not here, so Sam would be across there. She's not there today.
I took Sam's seat, guys.
She's working hard. She's making that money.
She's making them coinage in Sam's words. So our special guest today is running for Texas House Rep 1, District 138.
That's it.
In Harris County. Am I saying Harris County right? So she's going to introduce herself. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Akila Basie, and I'm excited to be here with you ladies.
Thanks for having us. Or coming.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Ms. Akila, first we're going to start. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am born and raised Houston, H-Town down.
Ooh. Oh, coming from a Dallas girl.
I'm from Dallas. But you got down 45 as fast as you could, I see.
Yeah, I'm glad you had it.
Yeah, well, after I left school or left Houston, and I went off to Spelman to go to school. And then I came back home and went way up north and went to Texas Tech for law school. And then came back down and started working as a prosecutor with Harris County. And after a couple years of that, I...
Said deuces.
Said, yeah. And I started my own practice.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I'm doing right now.
So what is your practice area?
Well, my one of my main practice areas is criminal defense, where I represent primarily indigent people accused of crimes in Harris County. Or not in Harris County, actually all over Texas.
Oh, cool.
And I do probate, and I consult for employment discrimination as well.
That's good. Yes.
I have a question already, because you used a big word. I used the 5 cents words. I'm just a small town. Indigent. What is that?
Indigent. Okay. Well, that means people who cannot afford lawyers. You know, that's one of your rights. When they say you cannot afford a lawyer, one will be appointed to you. Well, sometimes it's me.
So cool. How do you get paid?
You get paid through the county.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you have to take, after you've practiced or had so many criminal trials, they allow you to take a test, and you have to pass that test, and then from there you will get appointments as to, and then the courts will call you.
Oh, so you have to take a test to get appointments in criminal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you just go down there and put your name on the wheel and pray that the judge will call you.
I mean, you know, when you're handling felonies, you might want somebody who's probably passed the test.
That's true,
too, right?
That's true. That's true. So you're on the wheel. So you're getting selected. So the judge selects you for a case, and then you just treat them like you would treat anybody else that would pay, or?
Well, yeah, well, now, actually, the judges have very little to do with it now.
Oh.
And I think just to avoid, you know, any type of any appearance of favoritism. And so a lot of times it just goes through the coordinators or whatnot. And the system, it is essentially at random where courts can select from you. So it's actually a pretty decent system to make sure that there's no one who's, no attorney who's being picked as a favorite.
Oh, that's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it encourages you to do your job because you're not scared to go into a courtroom and actually fight because you might not, you know, get another appointment.
Right.
There. Right. So, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Learn something new.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you are running for Texas House Rep 138. tell us what district that is, and then for those that may not know, what does a Texas House rep do?
All right. Well, State District 138 is going to be in Northwest and West Houston area. That's like pretty much going to be the bulk of it is going to be your Spring Branch area.
Okay.
We have bits and pieces of Cy-Fair and Katy.
Okay.
Very smidge of Katy, though. And a state rep, what we do is we make the laws that for all of Texas in every area, essentially, that's what the name of the game is.
Cool. So what made you want to run?
Well, you know, being in the court system, oftentimes you're fighting and you realize that you're fighting for people because laws may not be fair. But the laws are what they are, right? The courtroom, mm-hmm. you learn, the courtroom is not where you change the laws.
Right.
And so I remember I got into it with opposing counsel and I remember and he told me, you know what, this is a courtroom. We don't make the laws here. We just enforce them. If you want to make the laws, you need to go to Austin. And I said, you know what? I think I might then.
Nice. Okay. So, and that started your campaign run.
And that's what started. Yeah. I said, it's time to see some things change around here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So, well, we're going to tap into your former ADA side / criminal defense side.
All right.
And then we're going to move on to, you know, your platform as a House rep.
Right.
So, as everybody knows, the infamous, famous case, I call it the trial of the century.
Right.
Of the year.
Okay, I tried it.
Yeah.
The case of 2019.
Right. OJ still has a century.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad. Shout out to OJ. You still got trial of the century.
Still got the juice, right?
Both double.
People still arguing about whether
right.
or not he did it or did not
still,
do it.
Still, even mm-hmm. though he had a whole, they
he
showed
it. Did not
it.
Do it.
Okay.
Did you see his hypothetical? Did you see his hypothetical? He
what
did it.
What we're not going to do is, OJ, I know you're innocent. I know it. I believe in you.
Did you see his hypothetical that he did on the news, like the anniversary of the death? Was it earlier this year or last year? Where he said, you know, if
he would have done it. He would have done it like this,
exactly.
Which is exactly how it was done.
Yes.
I did see that.
Oh, okay. We're
we're here.
I still believe in you.
Hey, you know what? He was never proven guilty.
He was
right.
not.
So
and he is
not.
Still not guilty.
And he's not.
Right.
And he never was because he didn't do it.
He was guilty of the burglary, but not the murder.
But we digress. From why we're here
well,
today.
This is a legal podcast. Might as well talk about it all. Well, I know everybody has heard about the trial of 2019, like, you know, major trial. It was in Dallas County, my hometown. The Amber Geiger case, who, unfortunately, she shot both them, John, in his apartment, shot and killed him. So that case was a very trying case. It was a very emotional case. A young man lost his life, and all he was doing was sitting on his couch eating ice cream. And the defendant, Amber Geiger, walked into his house, thought it was her own, walked into the wrong apartment, and shot him dead, eating ice cream. So everybody's had their opinions. Everybody's had their, you know, everybody's had a lot to say about this. With that, we would like to know, as former ADA, you know, your thoughts, especially when it comes to the castle doctrine, because everybody knows, you know, had an issue with the judge telling the jury, you know, you can take into consideration about the castle doctrine in the verdict, in which everybody knows the verdict was guilty. But
right.
So as a former prosecutor with the Harris County DA's office, you know, and also, too, being a criminal defense attorney, like, what are your thoughts about that and the castle doctrine? And let's go back and explain, actually, what is the castle doctrine here in Texas?
All right. Well, I think the jury got it right on the guilt and innocence portion. The castle doctrine, what that basically is saying that you have the right, you don't have a duty to retreat in your home if there is someone who you perceive as a threat in your home. You can use deadly force to protect your home or any place where you're at legally or lawfully. in a habitation. So that means I can use the castle doctrine at my mom's house if I'm there legally, or my sister's house, or something of that sort. So it doesn't just have to be my home, but a place where I am, a habitation where I'm at legally. I do know that there was a lot of issues when we looked at the trial and that going in. But one thing I think that, and I kind of stayed away from posting too much about it or saying too much about it on social media, simply because I wasn't in the courtroom for all those days of testimony, right? So what we don't know is exactly the testimony that was elicited to bring forth that defense. And that's something that a lot of times we look at the facts that we get from our news articles or what we see online, and we say, oh, well, you know, this doesn't apply here. Well, it might not apply to the, you know, the 20 or so sentences that we read, but we're not there listening to every second of testimony in the courtroom. And I do believe that it is better. You have to understand, even though, you know, she might not be somebody, a defendant who elicits much sympathy from us, that she still is entitled to her day in court and fairness. And actually, she, any type of favoritism should be should have gone in her favor. When you're on trial, you know, the state has the burden to prove everything. And so any toss-up, it's supposed to go to the defendant, you know. A lot of times we like the defendant to be a little bit more sympathetic than what we saw in this case, but it wasn't. But the facts and the rules still remain. So I think the judge probably let that doctrine in to, one, preserve the record. Mm-hmm. And what that basically means, we say preserve the record, is that if it was, case will be appealed. We all know that.
Yeah.
But when you appeal a case, that they're going to go, the appeals court will look at it and say, you know what, this might have been, based off of the testimony given, this could have been a possible defense. We don't know. And so therefore, we're going to overturn this conviction and go back down to the trial court and get another bite at the apple. Well, when you enter that in here now, whether she thinks it applies or not, we kind of cut that short, right? So she's already gotten that in there at the appeals court. So it's really, I do know that a lot of times the judge will put that in to preserve the record.
And you made a comment about it's going to get appealed. Why would a case like this automatically be appealed?
Well, it's not going to be an automatic appeal. But I do believe that just based off of the way that she's saying that it was what did she say? She believed it was her home.
Mm-hmm. More like a self-defense plea.
And then,
I mean,
yes. Yeah. And then you have, like, I think that's probably going to be your biggest issue on appeals, that she was acting in self-defense. Like I said, I don't agree that it was self-defense, but it's not about what I think, right? It's about what 12 in the box think. And it's about what the appeals court thinks, if that's, you know. But also, though, I think she got a self-defense instruction, actually, now that I think about it, didn't she?
Yes.
So you don't get another bite because self-defense was, they didn't agree with it. You know, appeals come down, well, you all know, appeals come down based only off of an issue of law or something of that sort. So she got that law in there. So I don't even know how, you know, I don't know.
Maybe what they try to bring up for an appeal?
Yeah, I can't think about it.
They still might.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, I just can't. Still. I can't think about what it's going to be.
Like, that's a stay tuned.
Yes.
But let's go back to the castle doctrine. And I have a question about the castle doctrine and self defense. Uh-huh. Is that considered the same thing, or is that different? Is it self defense, and then the castle doctrine is brought to uphold it or help self defense, or is that two separate things?
Well, I think they're two separate things, and then I also think that the castle doctrine kind of goes under the umbrella of self-defense, right? Because you can exercise self-defense anywhere at any time. You don't have to be somewhere. I don't have to be at home to exercise self-defense. But the castle doctrine is particular for being a place where you're, you know, a habitation where you're lawfully allowed to be. So.
Okay. So when it comes to self-defense, and, you know, people want to use that a lot, especially when it comes to, you know, guns, is self-defense, like, she murdered him. She shot him. And like we said, you know, Dallas County got it right. It was a murder. So the question is, when you use self-defense, is it shoot to kill or shoot to wound? Or, oh, like, I'm scared of my life, I shot you, now it's self-defense.
Well, self-defense doesn't always mean you can use a firearm either, right? Self-defense, and one way that I was taught is that it has to be, you have to match energies, right? You know, we all talk about matching energies now. So you have to match energy. If there's someone who punches you in your face, and, you know, y'all are about the same size or the same, you know what I mean? All things being equal, you don't have a right to pull a gun out and shoot them, right?
But I'm scared for my life.
But you have to, what can make them retreat, right? Because there's a good chance
if I pull out a gun, then yes, you should run. But I'm scared for my life if you punch me in my face.
But would it be reasonable, though? Is it reasonable to think that they're trying to kill you?
They might be trying to kill me. They punch me in my face and they keep punching and don't stop.
Well, but is it reasonable they're trying to kill you is the question. Or they're trying to beat you.
I feared that they might try to kill me.
And that's a fact question for the jury.
And the thing is also, when you say, I might have feared, self-defense, it boils down to it's a general standard. It's what a reasonable person thinks, not what I think, right?
Right.
So that's the issue with self-defense. It's like, no, I don't think if I say something to somebody and they slap me across the face, and then I pull a piece out of my back pocket. No, that's not the same. Mm-hmm. We're not mm-hmm. matching energies.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Yeah. I'm just saying for our listeners, somebody might be thinking that, you know, that's self-defense or whatever. No.
I mean, but I don't know. I guess I'll be the controversial statement for today. I feel like in her case, I had an apartment in Austin where this very thing happened all the time. I was close to the garage. People always mistook my apartment for their own. And so numerous times I'd be sitting on my couch.
Eating
and
ice
I hear,
cream.
I wasn't eating down. I was healthy. I was being really healthy. So I was probably having grapes. But someone was jimmying the door handle, right? And you could hear them trying to take the key and insert it. And one lady stayed there for 5 minutes. And so finally I went and I opened the door up and she was shocked. And she was like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you doing, friend? This is my apartment. And so she then looked up and realized it was the wrong one. And I just think about if we were all, I'm single, and if I walked into my apartment, or so I thought, you know, if you're having a tired day and you go and put your key in there and you think you heard it unlock, and you walk inside and there's someone in there, do you not go ahead? And if I'm going to shoot, don't I go ahead and shoot to kill?
So my
to protect myself?
So, do we know if the lights were on or off? Was he sitting in the dark eating ice cream?
I think he was sitting in the dark.
Okay. And
why didn't she turn her lights on?
Why didn't she turn your lights on? And I don't know. I feel like houses have different smells, right? Like,
yeah.
Yes, that
yes,
is true.
That
and
is.
I feel like that happens a lot, right? You talk about that, but did anybody get killed?
No. thank God. No.
And I, you know. And I think that's absolutely something that can happen when you have doors that look the same. But the first thing I think you do is you look up, you say, whoa, and then I'm
assessing the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think a quick side-by-side and a backup is what most of us would do.
Or at least turn the lights on.
Yeah.
At the very least, you know? I think there's a problem when you're just like, oh, you know what I mean? Automatically, the first thing you do is reach for your hip without even seeing what's going on here, you know?
Because that's my issue, too, with the self-defense. Because, like you said, the lady came to your door. You know, you open the door, and she realized. She went quickly to pull out a gun and just shoot you when you open the door.
Thank God. Because she could have, though. You know, I look at that now, and it happens so often that I never really keep my doors unlocked. But it happens so often that I'm glad I didn't. Because it's an unfortunate situation of what happened, but how many times do people keep their doors unlocked and these apartments look exactly the same and someone just walks in and you hope that they're not carrying a gun on that day because you are just sitting in the comforts of your own home doing whatever you're doing and then someone walks in and says,
yeah.
What are you doing in my house?
I don't think people get killed by this.
And that's the thing. You said exactly what you said. Walk in the house and be like, what are you doing in my house?
Yeah.
You don't just be like, bang. Yeah. Put your hands up. What are you doing? And then shoot.
And
like,
I think that's why the jury got it right.
That's
the part of how they got it right, because it was, what would a reasonable person do in this situation?
They would
cut
the lights on and look around.
Right. And then be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. After I done figured it out, this is not my house. I'm embarrassed. I mean, he would have got an edible arrangement the next day.
I am so sorry. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to kill you. So.
Right.
But again, I have to shout out to Dallas County. Y'all got it right on the verdict part.
Y'all did do that. I'll give D-Town a little bit of credit.
We're going to give you that, which I've been taking an L lately.
So, as former ADA, and you have the criminal background,
yes.
you believe they got it right on the verdict? Do you believe they got it right on the sentencing?
You know, again, I wasn't in the box.
Come on,
but come no, on, look, I got you. Look, that's part of being an attorney, right? That's part of being an attorney, right? You always gotta have a disclaimer.
Look,
always, it's always a depends, right? It's always a depends. You guys know that. There's never such thing as a straightforward answer, right?
I've not given one in 8 years at this point,
right?
I'm sorry, in advance. Right. I don't give them.
I mean, because there is not one, to be honest, though. Like, you know, there's no straightforward answer.
Well, you
yes
know, people
or no.
think the law is black and white.
They do.
They
but
do.
But then if that were the case, then where did our jobs come from?
I was just about to say it. We would not be sitting here.
Yeah. If you could read a checklist and then that just be all that you either yes or no on the checklist, I mean, you know, and it wouldn't have cost us so much money and so much pain and stress. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the student loans, right?
Right. We're not going there today.
Right.
We're on the happy times.
Right. but, you know, I think that it's not black and white, mm-hmm. and it never is. And so we saw everything that was put on. A lot of what we read was, you know, we saw the racist text messages and stuff with the partners. We heard from his family. But one, do we know what his family asked for? Maybe y'all do. I don't.
Well, I know the prosecutor asked for 28 years because his birthday was that following Sunday. Or right. he had just turned 28 right before the week before or the week after. So they asked for 28 years because that's the age he was turning for his birthday.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know necessarily. I don't think anybody really knew what the family asked for.
Okay. So, I mean, the family seemed quite forgiving. And so.
Well, the brother.
The brother. Didn't the dad say, I want to be friends?
Yeah, the father did come back and say that.
And so, I mean, we don't know what the family wanted in this case, too. And I think that a lot of times we look at what we wanted. But, you know, the family is the one, you know, at the end, and I hate to say it, but we're going to go on with business as usual in a couple of years, you know. And he's going to be a name that we remember as the anniversary comes up in our Facebook posts. And we're going to think about the injustices. But unfortunately, for many of us, this is just one of a million cases that happen like this. And so, or not a million, let me say.
But
a
lot.
It
is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a senseless
let me preface, not a million, yeah.
So when it does come to sentencing then, do they take into account, and they being the prosecutor sides and I guess the whole sentencing phases, do they look at this is what the family is looking for? Do they take the families?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I know when I was a prosecutor, and they still do it now, is that when you have an alleged victim of a crime, that's one of the first questions that you ask them is, how do you want to see this case resolved? It's taken into account. It's not always done, but it's absolutely something that I think that you should take into account, right? Mm-hmm. And so that could be what happened here. We don't know. And I don't know about you all, but I'm a little surprised that we even got a verdict.
I am
the
too.
We got.
I am too.
You know, so to say, what do you think about the punishment? I'm like, I didn't think we were going to get here.
Right. I'm still holding on to the fact that we had a guilty verdict.
Right. I've been answering
the questions. We got a guilty verdict. Guilty of murder.
And then I had people mad at me. They said they stopped talking to me because I was like, listen, I didn't think she was going to get guilty.
I didn't
either. He's like, you know what? I'm done talking to you, Tariq. I'm like, well, let's just stay focused.
Right.
We're making progress here, people.
Exactly.
You know,
we got
exactly.
a case. Yeah, we got a case on the books. You know,
yes.
It holds weight. You just, in your experience, they're not probably going to appeal, may not be heard.
It may not. Yeah, it may not. It may not. Well, it will be heard. It may not be overturned, though. You know? And so, I don't know. I mean, I think that you have to, again, like I said, we weren't there. And I don't know. We don't know what evidence that also hurt defense attorney put on for her to mm-hmm. make her seem like, because at that point in time, you know, they get to consider after guilt or innocence, it's kind of, you know, I've learned it has always been what you did, right? You don't get any character witnesses on guilt and innocence. When you get into punishment, it's who you are. And so she mm-hmm. is going to be able to have, you know, show that she was an officer. Mm-hmm. Of course, her record came into play, right?
Right. But, the text messages.
But, yeah. And things of that sort. Mm-hmm. But if somebody gets on there and they talk about, what she did for this person in the community or whatever else, we didn't hear that, right?
Yeah.
So,
good point.
You know.
Well, let's take a quick step back, because I know we've been talking about the guilt and punishment phase. Am I saying that right? Or guilt and innocence phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the sentencing phase.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people may not know Texas is a two-part when it
mm-hmm.
comes to that. So just real quickly explain that process, like the trial process in Texas, because okay. we do have two phase, and we actually have a trial for both.
Right.
So
exactly.
just explain that real quick.
Well, basically how that works is that you have what we call the first phase of any trial is guilt or innocence. Everyone is presumed innocent or should be presumed innocent. And it's up to the state to prove that whether or not or to prove that what they believe, which is what somebody's guilty if you're going to trial by that point in time. At that trial, it's simply whatever is in that indictment or what's called the complaint. And those are the instruments where they have like the what's called elements, you all know, written out from our penal code about, you know, what the alleged crime is and the dates and whatnot. And so it's literally a step-by-step, a checklist that the prosecutor has to prove and has to convince either six jurors, if it's a misdemeanor, or 12 if it's a felony, that they believe that somebody is guilty of this crime. And the jury has to decide unanimously in Texas that they believe somebody is guilty or not guilty of a crime. And actually, let me say that I changed that because I said guilty or innocent. You don't have to be innocent. You just have to be able to the state prove that you were guilty, right?
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
so I need to make sure that I say that appropriately, because you can absolutely believe that somebody is guilty, but was it proven?
Right.
He was innocent. I know where they're going.
Do you know where they're going?
I know where they're going. He was innocent. He was not in Texas. He was in California. But we're going back. we're muddying the waters all over again. So I'm just going to bring it. He was still. OJ, I believe in you. Continue on with where you were going. Because I saw your eyes. I saw that you looked over.
I didn't say anything.
You looked over.
But, yeah, so we have to. The thing is that if you can bring up anything and that cast any reasonable doubt that someone may not be guilty, then the jury is supposed to acquit them in Texas. And so could you be like, you know what, you and I both know you did that, but I don't think they proved it, and that could have happened. That is logical and reasonable that happened, what they said. Got to let you go, right?
Right.
That's what our law says, mm-hmm. In the most simplified terms. And so, but that is the first. It's called guilt or innocence, but it's typically guilt or not guilty. That's the first phase of trial. The second phase is if the jury does believe the state does prove that somebody is, in fact, guilty, you go into what's called your punishment trial. And it's where the state will reintroduce all the evidence. Now, it doesn't take quite as long because they literally just say we reintroduce all the evidence. And if it's been admitted, it comes in. If it's not, then it doesn't. And then at that point in time, that's where a lot of times, you know, you're going to get your best bet at getting something, a reduced punishment, a probation, a lower sentencing range, because you get to put on mama and you get to put on grandma and you get to talk about how you were a Boy Scout and, you know what I mean, and the community service you did. And
how you saved Shamu.
Exactly, wow. Right.
So you're trying to prick the jurors' hearts at that point then.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. You're trying to show them that you are a good person, and they're redeeming values. They should not just throw you away, right?
So it's like, so back to the Amber Geiger case. She was found guilty, and so now they had to convince, the defense had to convince, like, oh, no, she killed this person, but she's a loving person. She's a loving cop. She's caring. But then the prosecutor has to come back and be like, no, this she's not. All those things. And that's when like the text messages came in and things like that to show her character as somebody who's not loving and she needs to get like 28 years type thing. Or,
well, their job was to show that she deserved 28 years, and that's why they bought in like the issues with her record. And they show that, I mean, and there was, right, there was those bias, those text messages. I don't think they just showed them in, they put them in there to show that, oh, she is a you know, she wasn't a good officer, but that there was more malice in this shooting, and not necessarily directed just at Mr. John, but just as a whole, the way she had viewed, you know, the community, that her lens was definitely, you know, jaded towards certain people of certain color. And so that's what I think those arguments came from, mm-hmm. more than just saying that somebody's racist. Cause I think you and I both, you know, we all can agree that I could care less if somebody's racist so long as they leave me alone. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can be as racist as you want on your living room couch, right? I don't care. But when it starts affecting me and my culture, my community, mm-hmm. and how the laws are, you know, apply to me and my safety and the safety of the community at large, then we have an issue there, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what that was showing, that like if she's out, then you still have this issue because you can't change someone's heart,
right?
You know?
Right.
And so, but yeah, so I think that that's where they get that from. And then it's up to the defense to put on the woman who she said they found in a crack house and gave a ticket to, or gave a, as opposed to arresting. I was like, that's the best y'all got?
Okay. I didn't hear that one.
It was she sent her to like a rehab or something.
I heard her mom say that she was like sexually abused, I think at 6, and she'd just been through a lot. Like her childhood was bad. And so I was like, man, here we.
Oh, yeah, that's what you're going to get. Yeah.
They're always abused.
You're going to get your lifetime story. You got to get your lifetime story in there.
You know, Lifetime is working.
I know they are. This will turn into a Lifetime movie.
Oh, yeah.
This will definitely be a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Well, great discussion on the Amber Geiger case. Definitely thank you for your thoughts and things.
Even with all your caveats, I think we understood where you were coming from.
Right. So, because this case involved guns, you know, America, we have a mass shooting epidemic here.
Yes, you do.
And by you running for Texas state rep, which, like we said, Texas makes the House and the Senate make the laws here in Texas, and you are running for a position that makes the laws, what can we do about mass shootings? Like, yeah, what can we do? Do you feel like the laws that are in place now are good? Do you think they need to be changed? And if so, like, do you have a solution? You know,
I think they need to be changed, and I have a solution.
Yay! She got a solution.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of these solutions are they don't take anyone who's just off the chart genius. I think they're very common sense approaches that we can take to guns. We know that there's a problem, right? That's the first thing, right? We have to agree that there is a problem. And the problem is just mass shootings, right? So now we have to agree that the government can intervene and help fix these problems. That's where we are right now in America. Okay? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't agree with that second.
Right.
That's kind of where we stop. Mm-hmm. But I think once we get into a place where we can all agree that, yes, there are things that the government can do, then we can move to the third step, which is actually implementing certain things. And one of the most easy things to implement that we see actually in other states around here are red flag laws. Now, what red...
Yeah, I would say red flag laws. What is that?
What are red flag laws, right? We've all seen it on social media or read articles about it. But what they basically are is they're laws that instead of regulating the dangerous item like guns, it regulates dangerous people.
Oh, yeah.
And so what that means is that if you believe that someone has, or you have personal knowledge that someone might be talking about hurting themselves or someone else with a firearm, you can go to the court and get an order that will forbid that person from getting a gun or being able to purchase a gun for a limited amount of time. There's no particular amount of time, but, you know, the judge will determine that. And then from there, after that time limit is up, it goes again before a judge to revisit whether or not they should still be flagged from being able to purchase a firearm. I think that's something that we can easily implement, because what we see is a lot of times that there are, when we look at a lot of the mass shooters that we see, is that there are signs that this is going to happen. You know what I mean?
And they all look the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not going to go there. But
no, well, there's a study. I think statistics show. I mean, they look the same.
I don't think they all look the same.
It might be one or two that don't look like the other.
Now, there is a type, I guess, but they don't all look the same. We can't say that.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, they all look the same type.
Okay. But...
I'm not even going to comment.
You're not going to go there?
No.
You're not going to go there with it?
Okay, you know, y'all already attacked O.J. Simpson today. I'm just going to let y'all just...
So let me attack.
Yeah, O.J. only had three more, and he would have been a mass murderer. It's up to five people.
It's only five people?
If you kill five people at one time, it's considered a mass.
Really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Oh.
But I didn't like how you phrased what you phrased.
We only have three more to go, right?
But he didn't do it, so.
So, allegedly.
Allegedly, if there were three. If there were three other victims.
Thank you for fixing that. Okay. That statement that you made. But I did not know about the five people.
Yes.
I didn't know it only had to be five people.
Yeah, that's like the actual definition. I think it's like five people.
So, five people at a. Is it like every one time, one day?
Like one little period, like one incident.
Okay. So
I was thinking about the DC shooter.
Was that more serial though? A serial killer.
Because it was like months.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
That's more serial than mass.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I think when we're looking at that, though, you can. There are manifestos that they write. There are things on Facebook. We see these things. We see it's, you know, the writing is on the wall. But one, there's so many people who are doing it now,
right?
That people say, oh, we didn't take them seriously.
Well, so I'm, and I mean to cut you off because I was gonna say, how do you know which ones to take seriously? Because then in that case, you'll be red flagging everybody who have a bad day in a sense.
Well, it's not. I mean, I think it's a repeated pattern, right? And that is. That's the hard job for the judiciary. That's the hard job for the judge to determine who and who not to forbid from doing that. But I think that you also, the people who are around you and they know who you are, right? Like, if I come home from a hard day at court and I go, oh, I could just kill him, you know, I don't think anybody's going to take me seriously as a person. You know what I mean?
Like, a reasonable person.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? That I actually mean that I'm going to cause harm to anyone else, you know, or myself. And so I think it's just a matter of using discretion, you know? And I think when we have, the thing is when people have these conversations, a lot of times what we do is we ask questions that never will happen in real life. Like, well, how do you know? Well, you know. When someone is locked up in their room and they're collecting, like, you know, magazines and bullets and, like, stockpiling certain type of firearms, you kind of get an idea. And they have an animosity and a hatred towards one demographic or a certain type of, you know what I mean? Or
that's
anything
true.
Of that sort. Like,
yeah.
You know, there are certain signs that we can all see.
Well, and I just read an article, I think, right before I came here about a mother who just reported her son because he was showing signs of potentially causing harm to a mass amount of people. And so she called the cops and said, hey, I think he's going to harm people. And so the article twisted it at the end and said, should a mother really be reporting her own kid? But of course, my answer was yes, because we could have, if some of these other parents would have maybe made that same call, how many mass shootings might not have occurred just by them saying, Johnny's in his room a whole lot. Why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? What is he angry about? Maybe we should take him to therapy. Maybe we should do something else to cause that to not happen. So
And you can do both, right? Like, a red flag law does not mean you're going to jail when you get that court order. What that basically means is you can't purchase a firearm. That's literally what that means. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, there's no jail time or sentencing in relation with it. It just says, hey, you know what? You're on this list. You know what? You're going to have to sit tight until you go
calm
to therapy. or do whatever and go from there. And so, I mean, and I think you said, should a mother report their son? But if you think about it, the people who love you, the people who are around you are the only ones who are going to know what's, you know what I mean? That's just with everybody and everything.
That's true. So. That is true.
Besides that one, what else can we do? Because I feel like some people might say, I don't want to snitch on my best friend.
So I think of the no snitching as something completely different than, like, saving lives, right? Like,
coming from a prosecutor, former prosecutor.
Former, okay?
Former prosecutor.
But, you know, and one thing is, and I will say this, and I don't know if I should say this or not, but even when I was a prosecutor and people would be so quick to sign those stipulations, I did it because it was my job. But I was like, yo, you committed this crime with somebody. You're just going to rat them out just like that. Like, it was crazy to me. I mean, I would do it because it was my job, but I was just kind of like,
You snitches get stitches.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they would be quick. No hesitation to do it. But But seriously, like, when I think about, like, snitching, right, you don't think about something that's going to protect someone. You know what I mean? I don't think about something of that sort. I don't think about it as somebody is in danger and I'm saving a life or I'm making someone stay safe or the community safe. That, to me, is not, you know what I mean? Like, how many of us hear, oh, somebody's molesting a child. Oh, you snitching. You told. You're like, what? That's not snitching.
That's,
yeah,
that's
you know?
True. That's saving a life.
Yeah.
But some people believe
but
that,
some
though.
But some people believe
yeah.
that, though. Well, I mean, that might be, that's a code I don't adhere to.
You see how long it took for Art Kelly to be locked up in jail with nobody snitching?
Well, we knew. They didn't have to.
But he's just now in jail.
He is. I think people started to actually, like, take it seriously. But that's a whole
right. That's a yeah. We're gonna talk about that yeah. too.
But yeah, but I mean, you know, and I think that. But he also was doing apparently some Jedi mind tricks in there too, or whatever he was doing to stop those people from telling. You know what I mean? And whatnot. I don't know.
That is definitely a whole nother episode.
Yes,
we will discuss.
But yeah.
So to me, when I hear about the red flag, red flag law. Uh-huh. It seems like really we're asking the community as a whole to step in and help the government with this issue that we're having in our state, in our country.
Right.
Is that the way I'm kind of looking at it?
I mean, it is. But if you have to think about it, like, the community, we help law enforcement every day. 911 is literally the community calling and saying a crime is happening. Or mm-hmm. that's what it should be used for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the police come out, and when they investigate, they're talking to the community about what happens. When you go to court and the prosecutor puts on their case, they put on members from the community to tell the jury what happened. The jury, members of the community, determine whether or not somebody's guilty or innocent or not guilty. And so, I mean, as far as the community being involved in law enforcement and helping out with red flag laws, it's what we do every day.
So when you have the red flag laws and somebody... Let's go back to the example with the mother who called her son. So now, does he go? He appear before the judge? Is it like the magistrate, or is it a district? And is it a trial, or is it just a simple hearing?
This is once you decide to implement it, right?
Right.
So the details have not been fleshed out.
Okay.
But I know that you do get a hearing in front of a judge, and it looks like that the judge signs the order, not necessarily that it's a full-blown trial. Excuse me. So. You know, but I think we have to agree, and I think that's what's going to happen when we get to the ledge, is that we say, okay, we do need some form of red flag laws here
right.
in Texas. What are they going to look like? Who's going to be responsible for implementing this? Are we going to have standard periods, or is it going to go before a judge and be discretionary? What does that all look like? But again,
gotcha.
We have to get to level three, where we all agree that the government can intervene and actually do something to fix this problem.
And then y'all could flesh out.
Exactly.
Because the other issue I think about is... I think it's a great idea, okay? But our courts are already overworked with tons of cases. I'm in the civil side of sector. And so there are, depending on which counties you work out of, I normally don't work out of Harris County, but when I do, Harris County, you go file a lawsuit, you're looking at least 3 years before you're seeing a trial.
You know,
we're just so backlogged. And I don't know how the criminal side is, but I'm just thinking, if y'all are already... backlogged in the criminal system already, how do we come in and say, if this were to go through, now I have these red flag cases that need to be put before a judge, how do they get moved up over this felony murder case, or you know what I mean?
So a red flag is not going to be a criminal violation, right? Because you've not committed any crime.
Okay.
It technically would be a civil order that's put into place.
Good luck with that.
Okay. Well, no, because it can be like a protective order.
Exactly.
Because a protective order is a 14 in a real world. Well, real not exactly real world. Realistically, because you can get a protective order in like at the most a month. Because that process is like so
exactly.
quick. Like, you file your application, temporary ex parte, you serve the respondent, and then within 14 days, you get a hearing date. So I would think the red flag laws might need to follow the guidelines of how protective orders
exactly.
are. Like, to get it through that
I
quickly.
I think so too. And then the criminal violation doesn't come in unless you violate the order, right?
Yeah.
Then you violated a protective order.
I guess
order.
I would just get up worried. From the set, if I have somebody that I've watched and I'm like, he's angry. He doesn't like his employers. he's saying a few things that make me think that he might come in here and do harm. I don't know if I want. What do I do in those 14 days? You know, if I...
Well, we don't... I mean, again, we don't know if it's 14 days. We don't know if it's going to be like they have a lot of times in Harris County or whatever, where you have a 24-hour magistrate and
right.
put right into place. We don't know if it's one of those things where... Because the government can absolutely, you know, stifle a right and mm-hmm. then have due process, right? And then say, no, give it back or take it away for a good reason, mm-hmm. right? And I think that community safety would definitely be an exception. Like we have... The officers need warrants all the time to go into houses, right? But there are warrant exceptions where they can right. enter something for a good reason, if it's a justifiable reason. I think the same thing here. You might be able to stop someone from purchasing a gun for a valid, justifiable reason if it's good enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that community safety is going to be good enough if you have articulable facts that this is likely to occur.
So then I do like the law. I think it's great. Right. But I think that my issue would be with the false, you know, like maybe the people calling falsely, like say a person might be mad at somebody and be like, oh, I'm gonna call and get this person in trouble. And that tends to happen, you know, like community gets scared or for one little thing or whatever, we get sensitive or somebody getting mad. So how would that person be able to, you know, deal with that or, you know?
Well, you also have to think that false report to police officers is already a crime. In of itself. And I do know that the ledge this year was also trying to put into, I believe it did pass though, I'm not sure, but malicious prosecution, where that if you do call somebody or you, you know, decide to call the police because someone's made you mad and you just want to get back at them, that is a crime. So, I mean, there are safeguards that people are going to think twice. I don't think anybody's just going to call because they're mad.
Or what if, you know, somebody could be wrong, mistaken, you know, like they was like, he look like somebody that's going to shoot up, you know, like, you know, you got the old lady sitting on the porch nosy and she might say, well, he look like
he's the type.
Yeah. He look like the type.
Well,
or the nosy neighbor. He look like the type.
I mean, but then you have to think, I think each case has to be looked at on a case by case basis. And there's no, oh, well, this is just it. If you do it, this happens. Like we said, nothing is black and white.
Right.
And this law wouldn't be black and white either. It's going to be based off of every case, piece by piece.
Well, and I have watched whenever these laws are brought up, and then the people that don't want this to happen, they're going to bring up every scenario.
Yeah.
To try to knock it down, correct?
Right. Sure, they will. They will, but then the question, let's just try it, right? Because what we're trying now, what we're doing now is not going to do, it's not working, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they say, well, if it's just going to inundate the courts, it's just going to fill the courts up, well, then that's a problem we have, too, that there are that many threats in our country.
Right. That is a problem.
You know what I mean?
That's a good way to look at it.
So I think that's good that we have. Now we have some true numbers that people are literally sitting around here just terrified of their neighbor who has a bad day. I think, so let's get some numbers on the books, right?
So the red flag laws, I believe, is a great option to address mm-hmm. the issue with the mass shootings. But then we have the other issue that I think is affected by the gun laws is the self-defense, right?
Where
these parties are having legal guns and your skin color is so beautiful, but it makes me, I'm nervous. You know, yeah. I'm just nervous seeing you. So I just, your music was too loud, so I shot you. You're wearing a hoodie, so I shot you. You were jumping in the pool wrong, so I shot you. You were sitting on your couch eating ice cream,
and
so I shot you because I thought it was my apartment. How do we address those issues? And being that you're running for representative, what would you do? Is there a way to address those type of issues?
I think you address them with a murder charge.
But Dallas got it right on one.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else got off.
No, I think that was it, Jordan? He
the music one
didn't get off.
He didn't get off.
Oh, I didn't know about the music one.
Yeah, he got a lot of views, I think.
But you also have to think about it like, we got it right, but you have to start here. So we got to make sure we keep getting it right, right? And we see now that, you know, that there can be true, I guess, justice in our verdicts at this point. But we have to be present and available and go to court and serve on juries.
One more time for the people in the
back.
And
serve on juries.
It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. You know, but
I would love to serve on a jury. I'm never going to get picked.
You'll never get picked. It's so sad. I will never get picked.
I would love to be the head drawer.
Yeah, we're never, just accept the fact, we're never going to get picked.
I'm going to try, though.
Because they dismissed me when I had jury duty a while back, and when I was living in Dallas before, and yeah, they didn't pick me. They was like, oh yeah, we see you're a lawyer.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye, toodles.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, but right. I'm the one who want to get picked.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I want to see that side of the justice system, right? Yeah. I want to know what happens in those jury rooms. But unfortunately, I never will. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, so you're saying from the legally owning a gun, and if you're using the self-defense, then our only option is the going in and getting.
Well, not only option, but I think that is the option that we have right now to combat. I mean, because when you have an issue of self-defense, that there are times that, I mean, self-defense is a defense because it happens, right? That there are times that we do need to use it, and it's used appropriately,
right?
And we also have to remember, like, self-defense is not only used from a person of one color to another color. There are certain times where most crimes are intraracial in general, mm-hmm. and so it typically is going to be applied interracially, and so I don't think it's the only option. Like I said, there's issues of malicious prosecution, mm-hmm. and then so you can handle it when you think it's more of a racist issue, as far as, oh, I'm scared of you intimidated me for no other reason besides of your skin color. Then of course that's something that comes into play then too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, ladies, I think I'm tongue tied today. This was a great conversation. At the end of our show, we do something called Rest My Case. So basically what we say with Rest My Case is whatever issue that you feel like that went through the week or, you know, throughout the month or the year that you want to lay to rest, bury it, and don't want to bring it back up, that's what we do on this segment of the show. So whatever issue, statement, comments, you know, that you have, like, for instance, Rest My Case would be, like, ignoring the citizen of the verdict in the Amber Geiger case, because that's the case law now. So ignoring the sentence, but be happy with, she was found guilty of murder. So mm-hmm. it's like we're resting the case where, yay, she was found guilty. That's case law now. It's a step.
Right.
So you have a Rest My Case?
Well, based on what we said, my Rest My Case is going to be, I don't know. I don't believe in ever resting my case. The jury has to rest it for me.
Brainy said mine.
I'm sorry. That was yours. That was mine. I thought that was Sam's.
No. That was definitely mine. And I'll elaborate a little bit more. But as a lawyer, whenever these big cases come out, your phone rings while you're at work. I was just working, you know, and I was on vacation, but I was doing my own personal stuff, and people were telling me, it's out. She's guilty. She only got 10 years. And they called me to tell me how mad they were that she only got 10 years. She should rot in jail. And I said, guys, half the legal community didn't even think she was going to get a guilty verdict. So let's take what you said. It's two steps to it. And let's look at the W's and the losses. And mm-hmm. the W by itself is that here's a situation where there's been so many cases before this where they just walk because they're a cop and she made the right decision and she was scared for her life. And we don't look at who is laying on the ground, who doesn't have a life anymore. And so from that aspect, I said the sentencing part or the verdict was correct. And we have time now, hopefully no time soon, but if another case does come up, they can use this case as precedent and move on and build from maybe getting a better sentencing next time.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally agree.
And then Sam's rest my case is stop using a hug as a litmus test for Christianity. I'm just going to leave that at that.
I think so.
So, tell everybody, when is elections? When do they vote here in Harris County? Uh-huh. And repeat again what you're running for, and then your social media handles, website. You know, let our viewers know what they need to do in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Well, again, my name is Akilah Basie, and I am running for State House in District 138. Social media, I try to make it as simple as possible, is Akilah Basie. And that is on Twitter, that is on Facebook, and that is on Instagram as well. And between now and then, what you can do is go like the page, sign up for emails to get different events, because we are good in grassroots here. So we are going to begin in our block walking. We're going to be beginning phone bankings and just really getting out to the community on our own. So again, Akilah Basie, State House District 138. Voting, primary voting begins March 3rd, or is March 3rd, 2020. And the general is November 3rd of 2020.
Before you leave, yes. We talked today just about gun laws and kind of what you want to do with the gun laws. Is there any other issues that you're really passionate about that you're running on that you want to just drop real quick?
There are other issues that I'm passionate about.
What else do you have for the people so they know it's right. Beyond just gun laws yes. that you're passionate about?
I am very passionate about workers' rights and making sure that we are all treated properly in the workplace. I know that we see a lot of times as attorneys that people come into our offices and they have good cause of actions, but we just don't have the resources to fight them in court. And so it needs to be a law that can be applied. There are laws that can go across the board that you don't need the resources to fight and be treated fairly by your employers. I'm also here for health care. You know, a lot of times in our court system that it's a lack of health care, a lack of mental health available to our community. The jail should not be the number one mental health care facility.
Wow.
In our mm-hmm. state. And we throw away billions, hundreds of billions of dollars a year in health care every year. And that can go to Medicaid to make sure that we are all insured.
Yeah.
And here for equitable education. I don't think that anyone who graduates from a public school in Texas should graduate with a different degree than someone else because of where they live.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So check me out on
that's your
social media.
Do you know what number you are on the ballot yet?
No, not
okay.
yet.
Okay.
Not yet. But we're going for number one.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if you're in Harris County, we do have an upcoming election in November for the mayoral election. It is November 6th. So make sure you vote. Vote in November of 2019 this year. Vote in November of 2020 next year. Vote in March in primaries of 2020 next year. So thank y'all for joining us. I'm Brandy, and you can follow me at Brand_Janae. You can also follow No Further Questions at No Further Questions on Facebook, No Further Q on Instagram, and No Further Q on Twitter.
And I'm Taria Hutchinson. Oh, I gave my full name today. I did. You can follow me at Simply Being T on Instagram. That's it. Just follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, you can't follow her. Yeah. She's not here tonight. There's an empty chair. She'd be somewhere.
She would be next to me.
You can't follow her.
But definitely follow, subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on iTunes. Keep listening to us. Keep following us. And thank you again, Akilah, for being here with us and joining our conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you guys
Good
for
luck.
Having me. Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank
we wish you success.
Thank you.
So thank y'all. Catch us next time. And we're out.